Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the Metaphysical Hour. Tonight is March 11th, 2016, and I'm Julia Cannon, and I have Shonda Garrison here.
Hello.
And tonight we have a special guest, and I'll get to him here in just a second. First, we'll make a few announcements, and then we'll get to our very special guest. Let's see. Where are we? Who are we? And what are we?
And what have we done with our previous selves?
Yeah, exactly. The reason we're so confused and discombobulated is because we have been to the Enchanted Land.
Machu Picchu.
Yes. Yes. And now, see, Shonda has traveled with me, and now she understands why I get so weird.
Yes. I totally understand now.
Yeah. You get it.
Yeah. Yes. I get it.
Okay. So now you won't say anything now, will you?
No.
Thank you. Okay. All right. That's all it takes is just one trip.
Yeah.
She came in today and she goes, "You know what? You look just how I feel." And it's been, we got back late Sunday night, so, I mean, it's almost been it's not a week yet.
Feels like it, though.
Yeah. But it was amazing. Peru, and then we went to Machu Picchu, and amazing. If anybody has the opportunity to do that, I mean, definitely a bucket list item, but really, I mean, it's more than that. It's such an amazing, you really owe it to yourself to have this experience.
Oh yeah, definitely.
It's awe. I mean, pictures do not capture the awness of it. And we had, we'll have to talk about it sometime on, we'll talk about it very quickly. We caught the first bus out and it was pouring down rain. And so we got there, as the bus is climbing the mountain and it goes higher and higher and higher. And then the fog is, wiped away the condensation off the window of the bus, and I could see through the fog and the mountains through the fog.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh my gosh. I mean, it's just, and I could catch my breath. I couldn't even raise a camera. I don't know how you were taking pictures. I couldn't even think to take pictures. It's just, everything is just to capture that into my memory banks, because it's just so awesome.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
That mountain energy is just, wow, something else.
Mm-hmm. And then we actually get there, and then you climb in, and it's a lot of climbing, people. A lot of climbing. And I did it. But then you climb, and it's amazing because you really don't know where you're going. And then all of a sudden you just come up on stuff. And then all of a sudden there's this village that the whole thing is just down below you. And it's just like, oh my gosh. And I was just, I mean, you guys went off this other way.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went this other direction. I was actually taken into this other direction, and that was where, actually you guys went the right way. You just went the higher way. And yeah. I got to see the village before you did. That's what it was. I ended up finding out that you just went the higher way. And so I got to see it beforehand, and I was just like, and I went over here, and I'm like, I almost kind of had to keep pinching myself. I'm like, oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God. That's it. Oh my God. That's those pictures. Oh my God. Oh, but it was so cool because it was, the mists were just rising from the fog and the rain, and it was just so beautiful. So we had probably the coolest mystical experience because of when we got there. it was just, I don't know, really, really, really cool.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway.
Loved every minute of it.
Yes. And how many pictures did you say you got?
Altogether, 1,213.
Just a few. Okay. Anyway, so that's, yeah. So you'll be sharing those.
Oh, soon. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Those will be going up next week.
Okay. Very good. Okay. All right. So, and we'll be talking more about that and the experiences, and some really cool things came from that I'll be sharing in time to come. So, that's just more about that. What we have coming up, in June, I'll just go ahead and skip what's coming up in April for just a minute. In June, we have our QHHT classes. We have a bunch of activities coming up with our QHHT. We have classes and our reunion and a crystal dig here in Eureka Springs in Arkansas, all coming up. So if anybody's interested, just look on our websites. Do you want to list all those?
I've got a level 3 class, which is sold out.
Well, I mean the websites.
Oh, the websites. Okay. Yeah. QHHTofficial.com and DoloresCanon.com.
Okay. And so all that's coming up. And then we have our conferences coming up in April. And so we have our Transformation Conference, which is April 5th to 7th. And the UFO conference, which is the 8th to the 10th. And so those are back-to-back this year, which is super exciting. And it's an experiment, but it's super exciting. It's a super exciting experiment. and that's our speaker tonight, or our guest tonight, is one of our speakers at the Transformation Conference. And really excited to have him. It's Patrick Andries, and he's one of our new authors. This is one of your new books. You're not one of our new authors. You're a current author. Oh, I said it. Okay. You co-authored Naked in Public with your wife, Catherine. And then now you've got another book coming out, Owner's Manual for the Mind.
Correct? Right.
Right. So welcome to the show, Patrick.
Thank you. Thank you. Very excited to be here.
Yeah, so excited to have you back. And
yes.
And something kept telling me, as we were talking about Machu Picchu, was to talk to you, ask you about that. Have you ever been there?
No, that is on one of my lists as far as places I'd love to visit. Actually, the only time I've been out of country so far is when I went to India in 1999. And that was cool. A wonderful experience. Definitely a lot of contrasts, so it was an eye-opening experience too. Never really having been out of the United States before, you know, just seeing the wide diversity of how people live their lives. But one of the reasons I wanted to go there was I went there with a delegation of metaphysicians to meet our counterparts on that side of the world. And, you know, a lot of the traditions that we use in metaphysics, like a lot of the yogic practices and meditations and different spiritual techniques that we use in this country today, a lot of them originated from India. So it was really exciting to go back to, you know, the roots of some of those practices and talk to some of those people directly.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. In 99, my goodness. So have things changed? You haven't been back there since, or is that the only time?
No, I haven't been back there since 99. We do have plans to, you know, do some traveling down the road, but we haven't set up anything specific with that as yet. We have a 9-year-old daughter, so she's just now getting to the age where we can really start taking her out to different places.
Okay.
So that kind of put our international travel on hold for a little while until she got old enough to be able to really, really handle that. You know, I think she's at a good age now where she could take on a trip like that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Patrick, how about let our audience know a little bit about your journey and getting here, because you kind of came through. I mean, you've got a school and everything with your wife. I mean, you kind of, but you didn't start there. No.
Uh-uh. I've had a pretty interesting journey getting to where I am now, because my background actually started out in science, and you know, my first endeavor for a career was actually architecture, which was really science as much as engineering. And I also had a love of music, and so that was a big part of it. But then through that path, I discovered metaphysics, and metaphysics really resonated with me in a way that I had recognized there were a lot of truths and things about our mind and just our capabilities. And even when I was younger, I remember at 12 was probably like the first conscious realization that I recall of the power of our mind to create what we want in our lives. I remember it was kind of an age, you know, where everybody's thinking about, well, what do I want to do with my life? And I wanted to be involved in all these different things, but I didn't know how I could be involved in so many different things and be good at any of them, because I observed that, you know, most people dedicate their whole lives to one thing, but that wasn't really my path. I could tell that just that didn't fit me. And somehow the thought came to my mind that, you know, if I work on developing my mind, and if that's the one thing that I'm focusing on, that really I can participate in all these other things I want to do in my life and still, you know, be good at them. And so that kind of led me down this path. And then when I was in high school, I had some really interesting visualization experiences because I was getting into music, and I used visualization to help me get better in music and you know, get some solos and do some solos in our ensembles and things like that. And so then, you know, somewhere in college, I got on this path of metaphysics. I had some friends, and we started talking about all these far out things. And I'm sure you could totally relate, you know, especially talking about Machu Picchu, you know. And so we started talking about life force energy and astral projection and just all these different far out things that was not my normal kind of line of things to talk about, you know, in my family and my friends that I've been around up to that point. And so that really got me serious about studying metaphysics. I discovered that, you know, all of us are really born with these creative abilities, that we are inherently creators. And, you know, that's really what my book that's coming out in April, that's what that is all about, is that we are creators. We were endowed with creative abilities, and that our purpose for being on the planet is really learning how to develop that and bring that out in our lives. And so it's a step-by-step how-to guide on, you know, how to develop that. And I think one of the things about my path that was really important for, you know, my mission in terms of teaching is that I didn't come into this life, this gifted intuitive. You know, I have talked to a lot of people who just were born with it. And so their path was not necessarily teaching people how to develop that. It was just using their gifts. And I think that a lot of people don't realize they have these gifts because, you know, they weren't born with that. But I've gone through this path of, you know, being born sort of a normal person, not really understanding any of this, which, you know, normal meaning that most people don't use these abilities. And just through some effort and training my mind, you know, learning how to develop these intuitive abilities. And so that's really led me down that path. You mentioned that school. My wife and I had a school in Chicago until we moved in 2011. And so we had that school for quite a few years. We taught up there for about 11 years together. And now we have a school for children that we are establishing here in the Kansas City area, called Transcendence Academy. So that's really the same thing. Our school in Chicago was geared toward adults, and our choice at that time was teach the adults because they'll teach the kids. And then when we moved to Kansas City, the energy was kind of coming from the other direction. There was a lot of people saying, we really want this for our kids. And, you know, our daughter, like I said, is 9. So we're really wanting like something like that for her too. So that's really important. So that's why we started working with a group here to start Transcendence Academy. And So, you know, there's all these different things that go into my work here. You know, I worked at the Awaken Whole Life Center doing energy work. And so the energy healing I brought in because I found that a lot of people I work with, I work with some people one-on-one doing intuitive health coaching. In addition to the classes that we do, some people wanted to work one-on-one, but I found a lot of people needed, you know, energetic support. So that kind of brought in the energy healing work that I do. And now the kind of the new thing I'm getting into is sound vibrational healing is getting really popular here. So that's kind of a combination of my healing techniques as well as bringing that musical element into it using vibration for healing. So very exciting things coming up and developing. So, yeah, it seems like a very kind of a non-direct path, but, you know, I can see how every step has added a little something to the journey. So you can probably relate to that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, every step. Yeah, when you look back, you can see how you connect the dots. Mm-hmm. Everyone. Nothing's by accident.
Right, right. Yeah.
You were saying that in high school, you were using visualizations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was something that just occurred to me intuitively. And, you know, that was looking back kind of one of the signs that I'm on the right path now because things like that were coming up for me. And I was really getting interested in music at that time. And mm-hmm. Somehow I had the idea to start imagining myself playing this solo because there were auditions coming up for a solo. Okay. And so I had the idea each night when I was going to sleep to imagine myself playing the solo. I had a really interesting learning experience from that, though, because the first time that I did that, I was picturing myself playing it as if I was watching someone playing the solo.
Yeah.
And maybe about two-thirds of the way through, I realized something wasn't quite right. It wasn't going to work out for me. And I tried to change it because I realized, well, wait a minute. If I'm actually the one playing the solo, I'm going to be seeing everything and experiencing it from my perspective, looking out my eyes. But I was visualizing seeing someone else playing this solo, and that's not what the experience is going to be like. Right. So I could tell, though, there was already this inertia because I was meeting a lot of resistance trying to change that image. And as it turned out, it came down between me and another girl, and they liked us both equally, but they had never really heard the solo played on her instrument. And they said that it kind of came down to that they wanted to hear it on her instrument, even though they really liked the way both of us had played it. Uh-huh. And so the rest of the season, I got to watch her play the solo from the same position that I had visualized it.
Oh, how funny.
Yeah. So I learned that lesson the next year and made sure I started from the beginning to see everything from my perspective. It really taught me an important lesson that, you know, when we're visualizing, our mind creates the image that we're holding, and that becomes our life experience.
Yeah, you created it.
Exactly, exactly. So it really shows, you know, when we are deciding what we want to create in our lives, we need to be very specific. We also need to think about it from the point of view of, well, what's this going to be like as I am experiencing it? So include all of our five senses in that process.
Okay. What instrument did you play? I mean, this is just my curiosity.
I played baritone.
Baritone, okay.
Baritone. Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. All right. Well, that's very, very important information right there. Yes, as far as...
Well, yeah, that's the one thing that I find... so many of us, we lack that detail, and we don't necessarily have to be so specific. Like when I talk to people about wanting to create a relationship, sometimes they want to focus in on a specific person.
Yeah.
And I tell them, you know, don't focus in on that person because there's so many things that are unseen mm-hmm. that may really kind of mess up what you're really wanting to create because they might have personality characteristics that you don't see now, but once you're in a relationship, they're going to come out. They might just have different interests, or maybe, you know, you're not quite their ideal person. So right. if you're visualizing a specific person, you know, it's almost like you're forcing them into that or trying to manipulate them into right. it. But I always recommend focus on the qualities of the experience. And then, you know, then they may still be the person that comes in and fulfills that ideal relationship. But, you know, there could be other people that come in that would be so much better than that. You know, it saves you from all that trial and error. I mean, that's one of the things that I think we just go through this process of, oh, tried that one. Oh, that didn't work. Let me try something else. Oh, that didn't work. You know, so it saves so much more time if we can be intentional about what we're creating.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, like, do you have, like, a step-by-step, you know, process that you work through? Or?
Well, now I do, yes. And you know, that's all going to be described in the book, too, in terms of the steps of visualization, the steps of creation. And that's what we're really talking about, is activating our creative abilities. And so everything starts with a stimulus. There's something that stimulates us to start creating a desire in our life. And so for me, you know, I was in music, and going back to the music example, you know, they had mentioned that there were going to be auditions for a solo. And I was at a point where I was comfortable enough with my abilities as a musician that I thought, hey, I'd like to do that. You know, I'm ready to take a step up and take on more responsibility here. So then your desire starts to form, and it starts out really vague. And then you start to create more specifics about what it is that you really want. And this is where, you know, you start thinking about, well, how do I want to have this role, you know, or if it's a relationship, you know, what kind of qualities do I want in this person? And all those things help to start to develop that image that you're holding in your mind. And then you reach this point where you feel like, okay, you know, I think I've got it. I think I've got a pretty good idea what I want. And that's really where your thought can become planted in your subconscious mind, because, you know, from our perspective, it's the subconscious mind that brings all the resources and energies together to help us create the things in our lives. And so whether that's finding the right person and communicating with them on that subconscious level, and they start making changes in their life so that they can meet you, or, you know, in the case of me doing the solo, you know, it's practicing the solo, it's getting the music, it's imagining doing it and being prepared for the audition, things like that, all those steps that we take. So those activities leading up to that become very important as you solidify that desire. And then through this process, there's this point where you're like, yeah, that's it. You know, I've got it, and, you know, it's on its way. Sometimes there might even be like little hints that start popping up in your life, things that are close but not quite. And that's kind of a good sign that something is just about ready to happen. And then one of the most important steps, too, is actually receiving it. You know, a lot of people fall down on the very last step, which is receiving it. So they've gone through all this process of creating in their mind. They've gone through the steps of, you know, bringing it, but then they don't feel ready to receive it. They don't feel worthy of it, you know. And so it's that last step of just opening up and making that space in your heart and your mind to be able to accept this and say, yes, this is mine. This is something that I've created for myself. You know, so that's kind of a general path of the energy as it moves through mind. But it all starts with a thought. And that's probably the most important thing to keep in mind, is that each thought is like a seed planted in the ground. And then we give it attention, just like you're watering the plant, you're protecting it, making sure the weeds don't, you know, take it over. Those would be our doubts and our mm-hmm. our limitations that we might have. And then, you know, as it grows, just kind of enjoying that growth experience until it bears fruit. And, you know, then we can harvest it. And that's when we actually have our desire.
Something, okay, there's several points in here. One point, okay, you said your doubts. Something that at that point in there, I remember back whenever I was learning to manifest, and someone told me, they said, okay, envision, it's like a bud, like a flower bud. And they said, you don't check on it. You can't keep picking at it.
Like, yeah.
Don't keep doing that because it'll kill it.
Exactly.
Can't keep doing that. You have to leave it alone. You've already done it. Now leave it alone. Let it grow.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, that's an excellent point because, not only the doubts, but like trying to control it. I mean, there's a mm-hmm. lot of things in early stages that can really destroy the progress that we're wanting to start making. I use that same example too, that, you know, there is this long period of trust that we have to have. Because when you plant the seed in the soil and you start to water it, I mean, it could be days you're watering and you're thinking, okay, where is this thing? What's going on? Is it dead? Is it a dud? And so you have to just trust, because if you keep digging it up to see what's going on,
you're
just killing it, like you were saying.
Yeah.
So there is this kind of, I think in some of the holy works it describes it almost like a long dark night. You know, there's like this long period where, especially with bigger dreams, you know, a lot of times the bigger the dream, the more inertia it has. Right. So there's this longer period where you just seem to be trudging along and you're like, well, where's my creation? You know, I've been working at this for so long. And you just have to trust that things are in motion. And that's where, you know, using some of these intuitive skills that we're learning about and teaching about, like dream interpretation and meditation, you know, they help bring us feedback so that we can see what's happening. We can get feedback on our process of creation. And, you know, that's kind of a way of sort of checking in on it without being intrusive.
Right. Yeah. Because they said, yeah, if you're constantly doing that, and then that's casting doubts on it.
Right.
Well, when you keep casting doubts, then that's undermining it.
Right.
And you have to trust, you know, you have to believe in what you created. You have to know it happened.
Yeah. So the doubts will be kind of like weeds that come in, you know, so we have to pull the weeds as they come up, because they can choke out our dreams and desires. And, you know, one way that we do that is, through concentration. So I always teach concentration as a really important foundation, because everything that we do with the mind requires holding our attention where we want it to be for as long as we want it to be there. And there are so many distractions now. I mean, we have a phone in our pocket so people can reach us, you know, virtually 24/7, no matter where we are. And, you know, you have ads coming at you from everywhere. So, yeah.
So everything, yes.
Probably, you know, more distracted than any other generation in the mm-hmm. history of the world. And so it really is important to be able to focus your mind. And not only that, but, you know, everybody wants your money, everybody wants your attention. They're all vying for the same thing. And so if you don't have a strong focus of mind, you know, you can be led astray from your desires, because other people are going to recruit you into, you know, doing what they want too. So that's where the focus really, really comes important too. But like with our doubts and our fears and limitations and things like that, those are really thoughts too. So how we can use concentration to help get rid of those is, you know, every time that we find our attention getting caught up in a doubt or a fear or something like that, that is leading us away from our creation, then we bring it back and focus it, just like a concentration exercise. So, you know, by just taking something very simple, like, you know, you could even just take the tip of your finger and just bring your attention to the tip of your finger, maybe for just 5 minutes a day or something like that. And that just teaches you, by doing that continuously, what your attention is and where your attention is actually focused. Because a lot of people might think, you know, where my attention is wherever I'm looking, you know, and that's probably an easy thing to believe. until you really start examining, well, what is my attention really? You know, because you can focus on the tip of your finger and then bring your attention to the back of your head. So then it becomes obvious, well, my attention isn't really where I'm looking necessarily, because I'm looking at the tip of my finger, but my attention's back here. So then you realize, oh, well, my attention is something separate. And it's really what is behind all of our senses, because our body is taking in information 24/7, even when we're asleep. But the fact that you can sleep through the night and be completely unaware sometimes of the things going on around you shows that your attention is really the key to taking in that information from your senses and doing something with it. And, you know, so whenever your attention gets distracted by, you know, focusing on a fear, for example, a lot of times I describe it as a false expectation appearing real. And I learned that from one of my early metaphysics teachers, and I have no idea where he got it from. I don't think he's the one who created it, but I don't know who to credit that for. But
it's good, though.
Yeah. I mean, I thought it was very appropriate. I still use it today, even after all this time. Because, you know, when I thought about it, I thought, well, anything that's a fear is something that we're thinking might happen, but it hasn't happened yet. Because, you know, if it has already happened to us, it's not going to be a fear anymore. I mean, it's just going to be maybe a negative experience. Yeah, there are some experiences we don't like. But it's really not going to be a fear anymore. It's going to be reality at that point.
Yeah.
You know, so anything that is a fear, it isn't based on reality. So, you know, whenever we shift our attention back from that onto what we want, you know, we can start to minimize and eventually eliminate those doubts and those limiting thoughts that are actually taking energy away from what we want to create in our lives.
And then I'm trying to think. Okay, then like the end. Okay, I'm trying to think. That was the last part. So you have the bud, and then the weeds.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was a at the end.
Oh, the harvest?
Yes. Oh, yeah, the accepting. I wanted to talk to you about that. Why do you think that is? That, okay, now here it is. It drops in our lap. Here we have it. And, I mean, so, do you find that a lot? It comes and people don't even recognize it as their creation?
Oh, sure. I mean, sometimes, you know, going back to the example of relationships, you know, it's like somebody, you know, I've seen a case where, you know, somebody will come into a student's life or somebody who's talked to me about their experience and, you know, they don't recognize who they are right at first. You know, it's like they're right there in front of them, but they just can't be part of that. And, you know, later it's like the person said, yeah, you know, I really wanted to have more of a relationship with you, but, you know, you just didn't seem to be able to connect, you know? So maybe they go their own way, you know, for 5 years or 10 years, and then they come back, and then maybe the other person has changed and grown, and then they're ready, you know, now they're ready to be together. So I think sometimes it is a learning experience, you know, when that happens, it's almost like this little glimpse into the future of, oh, this is what you could have. So just because we're not ready for something and we kind of pass the opportunity by, I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. Sometimes it's just a little knock on the door and it says, hey, you know, if you make some changes, this can be in your future. And so then it's a sign, you know, usually when we aren't able to receive what we've created, there's some kind of thought that we aren't valuable enough to receive it, or we aren't competent enough to receive it. There's a lot of different reasons why those things can be rejected. And, you know, there's some people you'll recognize them. I mean, I used to actually be like this too, you know, kind of a perfectionist, you know, when I was younger. And I realized as I grew and I matured in my soul growth, it was really a like an inner drive for excellence. But when I was younger, I interpreted that as perfection, like, you know, there was this perfect state that you could attain.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, as I practiced and I grew, I realized, well, perfection isn't just this destination that you reach. It's really more like a state of perfecting. It's more of a verb that we're always improving. And it's really just this constant idea that wherever I am now, there's always some improvements I can make. So it's not just kind of like sitting by and becoming complacent and saying, oh, well, you know, this is how I am. You know, it's not going to change.
Right.
It's not going to change.
I totally get you. I can, you know, in high school, they had, I don't know if you remember these charts, they had, I don't even know what they called it. It was like the levels of, what is it? It's like, because I was in science as well. You know, it was like, was it in high school? It may have been science. Anyway, it's like you have these levels of survival, you know, and like you can't go higher. I mean, like you can't. Oh,
Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Hierarchy of needs.
It probably is. Yes, your hierarchy of needs. Yes, exactly.
Yeah. So where you have to take care of your survival needs first before you can move on to addressing your emotional needs. And
right.
So as you address each one of those levels, then you can move on to higher and higher levels of attainment.
Well, what's the highest level?
Well, the highest level would be self-actualization.
Exactly. Yeah. And when I heard self-actualization, it was like, that's where I'm going. I remember that when I heard that, that's where I'm going. So I can totally relate. That's where I've always been. I'm going there. So I totally get it. That's that part in me going, I'm going there.
Yeah. Yeah.
I get it.
And, you know, I'm really curious how many people, just like the experience you had, how many people, when they're hearing that, really think, oh yeah, self-actualization, that's where I want to be. Mm-hmm. And, you know, how many are just kind of like, well, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
You know, so I think there is this inner drive, though, within each of us, and it's definitely louder in some than others. And, you know, I can totally relate to what you're describing, too, because that's kind of always been my inner drive. No matter what I've been doing, I always wanted to be good at it. I always wanted to develop my skills and be better, you know, in a year than I was today. And so that's always just kept me propelling forward. And that's been kind of that universal theme and that universal drive that I've had really my whole life, even though I've done all these different things, that's been the constant really throughout. And I think sometimes too, you know, people on a spiritual path, you know, you may have recognized this too. It's hard to just kind of settle into something where you're doing just one thing for a really long time. I think part of that is because, you know, as we are perfecting the soul and giving our attention at that level, it's like our soul understandings are coming through and communicating, look, you know, this is an area where, you know, it's not going to be comfortable, but there's a lot of growth here. There's an opportunity here. And so I think we're drawn into these diverse experiences. And through that, you know, we're growing on the inside because our attention is more focused internally on how we're growing and changing rather than externally on, you know, what we're physically attaining or physically creating. And I think all of that is part of that self-actualization path.
Right.
You know, you are really internally directed. Mm-hmm. And so it does kind of like seem to shift us around, you know, because there's been a few times in my life where I've landed, you know, some really nice jobs where I was making good money and I enjoyed what I was doing. And I thought, oh, I could be doing this for a while. But then, you know, forces outside of me kind of shifted things around where there were changes in the company or a shift or, you know, things that happened that just kind of created an exit path for me that, you know, wasn't something that I consciously chose. But then as I kind of moved on from that comfortable life experience. You know, I had this period of uncertainty and discomfort, but then the next thing was always this amazing thing that, you know, I never would have been able to experience or have, you know, if I just kind of like settled into this, you know, nice life, or, you know, this 30-year career and, you know, working toward retirement. You know, that's never really been my ideal. You know, I don't ever really see myself ever retiring. You know, I would like to be financially independent at some point. Yeah. But
yeah. Well, you said all that so eloquently, you know. You said you had a very eloquent way of saying
Which part?
What you said eloquently was, can I paraphrase?
Sure, absolutely.
My life took some twists and turns that I really didn't like, that I really didn't want. And the rug got pulled out of me a few times, out from under me a few times. And I had to do some things I really didn't want to do, but, you know, hey, I got up, dusted myself off and started over again. And that's just what you have to do. But, you know, I grew. And
absolutely.
Yeah. And that's the path I chose. Yeah. Yeah. And that's what you have to do. And that's the self-actualization path. Yes, exactly. That's what you do. And I agree. Totally. I did the same thing.
High five.
Yes.
You know, that brings to mind something else that I think is an important perspective. I talk about this in my book to kind of lay the foundation, because I think sometimes, you know, even when we consider ourselves a spiritual person, we're on this spiritual path, it's easy to get just caught up in the physical experience of it all, because, you know, the physical senses are very demanding. And the physical world is very demanding on us. And so it requires a lot of our attention out here just to get things moving. But, you know, I think the real key of this whole self-actualization piece is that we are not just these physical beings. We are spiritual, energetic beings by our nature. And that we're just having this experience in this body. I mean, there's so many holy texts around the world of different religions, and they refer to the body as being a vessel, you know, and there's a reason for that, because intuitively we know that this physical part of our experience is temporary. You know, we know that everybody's body is going to die. I mean, even the immortalists, you know, like I worked with Leonard Orr for a while. I learned intuitive breathing with him and with Sandra Ray, and they consider themselves immortalists. But his criteria for an immortal being was anyone who could live over 300 years.
Okay.
So even then, immortal is a relative term, because, you know, being physically immortal, you know, I think everybody knows it's ridiculous that to think you're going to be in the same physical body for 10 million years, you know, like the span of evolution on the planet. So, you know, I think his criteria is really more, if you can live 300 years or more, then you've developed enough self-control to have the ability to determine, you know, when you're going to exit the planet. You're going to be able to do that voluntarily. And that's kind of one of my goals too, is, you know, to be able to leave voluntarily and not just be kind of forced out unconsciously. And so, you know, when we look at our experience, and this can start with, you know, dream interpretation, and then work into meditation. And then as we get more control in our abilities, we can start experimenting with astral projection and things like that. And I've heard a lot of different teachings on astral projection, for example. I mean, some teachers really get into all the journeys you can take. You know, you can travel all over the world and you can help people and all these things. And then there's other teachers that go to the other side and they say, oh, that's all a distraction, you know, that takes us away from our spiritual path. And when I was really deciding whether I was going to continue including that in my teachings, I realized the really important thing about astral projection is it gives us a very tangible experience of being immortal. because when you can separate your consciousness from your body, and in some cases even see your body and see yourself outside of your body, mm-hmm. it really shows you, wow, you know, all this stuff, this isn't just talk. This isn't just, you know, some nice idea. I really am an energetic being, and this is my energy body. And, you know, there's my physical body, which is just a denser form of energy. And, you know, one of the reasons I love physics is because physics is all about energy. It's the essence of the universe. And, you know, we are these energetic beings, and we're just these more subtle levels of energy as we keep moving up the spectrum. So our physical body is very dense, but, you know, we know that all of these atoms come together to form molecules, and that all of this matter is just energy bound up. It's all potential energy. And the atomic bomb shows us what happens when we release all of that energy, you know. And Einstein's famous equation that everybody quotes is equals MC squared. And I don't think a lot of people really know exactly what that means, but M is mass. So, you know, whatever the mass is of the object, you know, let's say something is 1 kilogram, which is a pretty small size physically. But the C is actually the speed of light, which is a very large number. It's like 380,000 meters per second. Mm-hmm. And then you square that.
Yeah.
And so that makes it this unbelievably huge number. And so when you take the mass times the speed of light squared, that's the amount of energy in matter that's bound up within it. And, you know, if you've seen pictures of an atomic bomb to see how small they are, and then all that energy being released suddenly, you know, I mean, that's what we are too. You know, it's like all matter is made up of energy. It's all bound up. And so, you know, looking at it from that perspective, you know, from the soul, and what, you know, what is it that the soul really wants? You know, what is the soul invested in? Because the soul doesn't care if the body dies.
Yeah.
You know, the soul was here before the body. The soul will continue to be here after the body. So it's not really caught up in all this drama that we are caught up in during the day. And so when you start looking at things from that perspective, it just kind of helps to cut through some of the daily drama that we experience. And you realize, oh, you know what? This isn't that big of a deal, you know? So what if I lost all my money? You know, I can have twice as much money in 10 years. You know, I can rebuild it. You hear some of these self-made millionaires, and so many of them, they talk about going bankrupt 2 and 3 times on their path toward becoming a multimillionaire. And the key is they took everything as a learning experience. They didn't just give up and say, oh, well, I guess I was never meant to have money. You know, that was their drive, as they wanted to learn. That was their path of creation, learning how to use the mind. And so they learned from the experience and they moved on. And, you know, so many of these experiences, if people start looking at their life from the perspective of the soul and realizing, well, the soul isn't really caught up in all this drama, you know, it's like they could really start seeing the learning that's involved in so many of these experiences, and not get caught up in the drama. You know, so many people have these experiences that they consider negative, and then they're just stuck in that, and they keep repeating it like a record over and over again, and they never get out of it. It's something like, why did she do that to me? Why did he say that to me? You know, all these things. Why did I do that to myself? You know, why did the universe come crashing down on me? You know, why did I get fired? All these things. Why?
Right.
Instead of, you know, what we could be asking is what? You know, what can I learn from this?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how can I move forward from this? And so those are all things that bring us back to that self-actualized state, which is really, Maslow, you know, was looking at it from the perspective of a psychologist, even though I think he was a little bit metaphysical, but he couldn't say any of that, you know, because he would be kind of laughed out of the psychology circles. But but reading his stuff, I think he had some metaphysical understandings. But I really think that self-actualized state he's talking about is looking at our life from the perspective of the soul, because we're really looking at it from the learning experience and not getting caught up in all the drama, just learning from it and moving on. realizing that all these things, especially the challenging things, make us even stronger.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and just keep going higher. That's just I just saw it as like this perfected, you know, it's like as high as you can go. That's just how I saw it. It's like, let's just go there.
Yeah. Well, I love playing in some of that, you know, the esoteric stuff too is fun. Like astral projection is probably mm-hmm. outside of the experience of a lot of people, but I think it's a valuable experience and not something just so we can go play around. I mean, even though I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing, as long as you know how to be safe mm-hmm. doing that. But just from the perspective of really kind of driving home the point that there's more to this life than this life.
Absolutely. Well, like you said, you know, we've got to, like on the other points, staying focused and eliminating a lot of the distractions, you know, as far as realizing what's real and what you want. That's what so much of it is,
mm-hmm.
you know, and just, you know, and if that helps you to help identify that.
Yeah. I mean, I think, cause like you're talking about, that focus is really key. And there's several techniques that can be used to help maintain that focus. One of them that I like is, you know, to create a list of things that you're creating, you know, like 8 to 10 things, and just write down your goals and then have it in a place like your bathroom mirror or your bedroom when you get up in the morning, or the wall above your desk where you work, where periodically throughout the day, you could look at that list and remind yourself of the things that you are currently working to create in your life. There was a really interesting study in Harvard, and they interviewed one of their graduating classes, may have been multiple classes. I'm not sure how many years worth of students they interviewed, but they checked on them later. I think it was like a 10 or 20 year period or something like that. And they discovered that around 2 to 5% of the students were earning like 80% of the wealth of the graduating class. And the thing that they had in common is that those were the students who had set very clear goals.
It's always amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, they activated their mind's creative ability. Yeah. And, mm-hmm. and so writing it down is like a way of making a commitment. You know, it's making it physical. It's the first step of making it physical.
Oh my gosh, I just looked at the time. We have like 2 minutes left. So
I know. Where did the time go?
It sure did. How about, why don't you let everybody know how they can reach you?
All right. Well, probably the best way to reach me is at intuitiveschool.com. And that's spelled just like it sounds, intuitiveschoolaltogether.com. And also, I did want to mention that, you know, the book Owner's Manual for the Mind is coming out in April at the mm-hmm. Transformation Conference.
Yes. And
so we didn't really get a chance to mention that's coming up, which I'm very excited. So I'd love for people to come out and see me there. And also, I checked on the website. I noticed that your website has the book available for pre-print sale.
Yes.
Which is very exciting. So it's actually 20% off until a week after it arrives in the warehouse. Is that
right.
correct?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Till it comes out. Yes.
Yeah. So, so that's, that would be a great way to do that.
Order it now.
Yeah. And yeah, all the things that we've talked about, the book is really the culmination of a 10-year project of bringing together, a lot of the classes that, you know, I've been teaching over the last over 20 years now. It's hard to believe, but so it's bringing those together. And, you know, it all really started with the idea of, you know, wow, what would it have been like if when we were born, we'd all just been given an owner's manual?
That's great. Yeah.
You know, so I thought about all the things that if we were given an owner's manual to be able to become proficient creators.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what would that be like? So it's a step-by-step process. And then there's also resources too, so that if people want to go a little further with that, you know, recognizing people might want more help and support and assistance, there's resources in there too for where to go for that.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for being with us, Patrick.
You're welcome.
This has been wonderful.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, I've enjoyed it.
Absolutely. Well, can't wait to see you again in April.
All right. I'm looking forward to it. I'm ready.
Okay. Well, we'll see you there. And all right. Everybody, so glad to have been back. And we'll see you again or talk to you again next week. That will be, the 18th? We'll be back with another live show. And we look forward to – I'm sorry, again. See, I go into dumb mode again whenever I have to – anyway. So it's been wonderful, and we'll talk to you then. We love you all. Good night, everybody.